Hello, my name is Jody Lee Mott, and welcome to Dream Gardens, where we talk of the kids' books we love. On this twice-monthly podcast, I interview other kids' books enthusiasts, such as writers, teachers, and librarians, about their own favorite children's books. I'm going to be taking a short break from podcasting during the month of July, so this podcast will be my last one for a few weeks. However, I will definitely be back with a new one on August 1st. Part of the reason I'm taking a break from Dream Gardens is to give me more time to work on a few things I've let collect dust. Part of it is to take a breather, and I want to reflect back on what I've done so far. I want to re-examine what's worked well and what could still use improvement. I only started the podcast in November of last year, and up till then, I've never really done anything like this. So even now, after 16 podcasts, I still think of this as a work in progress. Now, over the past few months, I've received some feedback about the podcast, mostly positive, but also a few suggestions how to make it better. Both are greatly appreciated. Now, if you like this podcast, you've liked some of the things that you've heard, the best thing you could do for me is go to my website, jleemott.com, and leave me a comment. If you want your message to be private, then I also have a contact form to send me a private message. So far, the people who have agreed to appear with me have been here because I invited them, and they were gracious enough to accept. If you are someone who has an interest in kids' books as well, or you know someone like that, please drop me a line about a favorite book of your own that you'd like to talk about, especially if it's one that you haven't seen covered yet. I'll be happy to set up a time that works for both of us. I would love to hear from you. My guest today is author Alina Sayre, creator of the middle grade fantasy series Voyages of the Legend, which includes the books The Illuminator's Gift, The Illuminator's Test, and most recently, The Illuminator Rising. You can find her website at alinasayre.com. Thank you for joining me today, Alina.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for hosting.
As I mentioned, you've written this fantasy trilogy that's Voyages of the Legend. Can you give a brief summary of what it's about for readers who might not be familiar with it?
Sure. This is the story of an orphan girl named Ellie. She's 12 years old and about to age out of her orphanage system aboard in her fantasy world. She has a talent for drawing and discovers that she also has a magical ability for seeing more than the average person can see. It's kind of a supernatural realm. And she finds herself joining the crew of the flying ship, the Legend, and is swept off on a series of dangerous adventures with this crew, who she hopes will become her new family. And then the series just follows her adventures as she grows, not only as a sailor, but also in her own ability to overcome fear and face the challenges before her.
And what inspired you to write this story?
That's kind of a complicated question. I know some people have story ideas come to them full-blown. For me, it was more a process of, over time, just collecting an idea here, an idea there, and slowly starting to put them all together. When I was a 15-year-old camp counselor, I met a girl who had these really transparent blue eyes and really mesmerizing a camper. And I thought, that would be very interesting in a story. Her name was Ellie, which is the name of my main character. And so I think that's probably the earliest idea I can trace. But it wasn't until my sophomore year of college when I started making connections between the different ideas and the story began to evolve. And that was just the beginning of several major revision overhauls, and I can tell you the final draft of the first book looked nothing like the beginning. So everything changes over time with this series.
So far, you've written three books in the series. Is there a fourth on the way?
Indeed. Number four is my current work in progress. I'm hoping for a fall release date in this year. So that will be the conclusion of the series and will hopefully satisfy everyone's wishes.
The book you chose as one of your favorites is special to me because it happens to be one of my favorites, is The Miraculous Journey of Edward Tulane by Kate DiCamillo, which was published in 2006 by Candlewick Press. What can you tell readers who are unfamiliar with this book what it's all about?
The Miraculous Journey of Edward Tulane is the story of a China rabbit who is loved by a little girl but loves no one himself. And it's his journey over time from selfishness to selflessness and learning to give love as well as receive it. So beautiful and so sad. I cry every time I read it.
What was it about this book that really drew you to it?
Well, I love everything Kate DiCamillo has ever touched. She's my writing idol, and I loved Because I'm with Dixie, which I think was the first of her books I read, and then I just couldn't get enough. I've been reading everything she's ever written. This book was special to me. I thought not only are the illustrations by Bagram Mbatalin beautiful, but it's such a simple and yet powerful story. It really just boils down Edward's journey to something that's easy enough for a child to grasp and yet profound enough to really change an adult's life, which I think is the hallmark of wonderful middle grade writing.
As a writer yourself, you've probably heard the general rule of thumb that writers should avoid characters who are passive. And yet, in this book, Edward is entirely passive. He can't move or speak to anybody or really communicate. And yet it works. So why does this passive character work in this book when usually we're told, you know, you should avoid things like that?
It's a great question. At the beginning of the story, Edward's little girl's grandmother, Pellegrina, tells a fairy tale about a princess who loves no one. It's kind of a dark and gruesome fairy tale. And the princess is the main character who comes to represent Edward throughout the book. So I think that while Edward is a china rabbit who can't speak or communicate with humans directly, he's a very active character in an internal sense. The outside actions may not be orchestrated by him. All the internal actions are happening within him. And this book, I think, focuses primarily on that internal world where Edward is learning to overcome his selfishness and become more of a loving character. So even though there's not a lot of outside activity that Edward is causing, I think he's still an active character internally.
You talked a little bit about this character of Pellegrina. What do you make of her? Who is she?
She's kind of terrifying, for starters. I really just hope no one has her as their grandmother. And yet she casts herself in the fairy tale she tells as the witch. Very interesting. And yet she's also kind of the truth teller in this story. She obviously loves her granddaughter, Abilene. And she's the only one who can both see Edward as a sentient being and also see his selfish heart. Abilene, of course, looks at Edward and thinks he's the most perfect creature, and she loves him completely. Pellegrina sees his faults. And the book doesn't say it outright, but it's kind of suggested that somehow, at some level, Pellegrina is the one who kind of kicks off Edward's journeys by separating him from Abilene. And it's that journey of loss and separation that eventually helps Edward to overcome his selfishness. So she's kind of an almost supernatural, mystical character who's kind of pushing Edward along this journey of self-discovery. That's what I make of her.
Well, she says at the very beginning, "I'm very disappointed in you," before the story's even started.
It's as if she can see Edward's thoughts at some level. And that's the beautiful thing about Kate DiCamillo. There's a lot of subtle magic and fantasy going on. So we completely believe that Abilene's grandmother can hear the secret thoughts of her stuffed rabbit. It doesn't seem strange at all within the context of the story.
This is a very short book, but what makes it unusual for a children's book, the story itself stretches over years, decades, really. There are no quick payoffs at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Towards the end, there's a doll maker named Lucius Clark who says, "There's doll time and there's real time. And you, my friend, are entering doll time." I think what he means by that is that, you know, dolls don't age. Edward doesn't have a timeline the way that the human characters do. And since Edward is the point of view character, I think the sense of time passing is very fluid. The people in his life come in and out, but Edward himself never ages. So I think that's how the author manages to cut off some loops of time, even though years and decades are passing.
Now, a lot of this book is about finding your way home, or Edward trying to find his way home. But he actually has five different homes. You know, there's Lawrence and Nellie on their farmhouse, Bull and Lucy as they roam about the world, Bryce and Sarah Ruth at their own kind of broken home, and then his home with the doll maker. Except for the last one, he doesn't really want to leave any of these other homes. He actually becomes happy where he is. Could he really have been happy if he stayed, say, with Lawrence Nell, if he had stayed there and nothing had stopped him from staying there, would he really have been happy? Or is there something about having to leave over and over again that makes the real change in the end possible for him?
That's a great question. I think that he would have been happy with Lawrence and Nellie, his first home after Abilene, to a certain extent. We know that when he leaves them, he's sad. His heart cries out, Lawrence, Nellie, when he knows he's not going to see them again. But at the same time, he hasn't quite reached that point where he can actually love another character. Lawrence and Nellie are nice to him. He sees them as kind of positive, benevolent characters, but not really as friends or family members. So I think at the level of depth he comes to at the end of the book, he's not really capable of that with Lawrence and Nellie. So maybe it would have been kind of a truncated love story.
I've mentioned all these different characters he encounters, and each one of them has their own story, and each of these stories are sort of cut short so we can continue with Edward's journey. And I'm wondering, thinking as a writer here, are there any one of these character stories you would have either liked to continue reading or even write yourself?
Well, I want all of them to work out perfectly, of course, as a reader. I just want him to be able to find happiness and stay with each family. I'm particularly the story of Bryce and Sarah Ruth is just heart-wrenching. At the same time, I can see the construction of the book. It's like, oh, this needed to happen from a story construction point of view. Of course, I would have loved it if, you know, Bryce and Sarah Ruth had escaped from their abusive father and gone off to live a happy life somewhere else. But sadly, it's not how the story goes.
And you think that's a tough thing for a writer to put characters through difficult situations because you'd rather see them happy, but you know the story demands, like in this book.
Absolutely. The major comment I used to get in my college writing classes was, your stories need more conflict. So I was caving in and giving characters the happy ending too often. I think I've come to see it as, for the happy ending to mean anything, the journey has to involve some sacrifices and some conflicts. And which, in fact, reflects real life more accurately. We don't always get what we want, at least not quickly. And for characters for readers to look into the story and find it authentic, there has to be some truth about it, some mirroring of that hardship in real life.
Of all the adjectives Kate DiCamillo could have used, why is Edward's journey a miraculous one, do you think?
It's a really unusual word. Miracle is very strong language. I think she is kind of pointing to the fact that love is a miracle, that when Edward learns to get outside of himself and to really give love as well as receive it, because he received it kind of taking it for granted at the beginning of the book, not realizing what a miracle it was. And by the end, maybe he's realized that and appreciated it. So maybe it's a journey toward a miracle in some ways.
Now, there's a question I find myself asking a lot for many different types of books, but I think it's particularly meaningful here, which is that how do you think, as an adult reading this book, how is that different? Or how do you think you approach the book differently as opposed to how kids? I mean, it is a kid's book, and you expect mostly kids would be reading it, but they might have a different take on it than us as adults reading it.
Absolutely. I'm also, my day job is teaching, and so I get to see kids react to this book. It's one of my favorites to teach. And it's interesting to me. I think that books are kind of like mirrors that reflect our life experiences to us. And so as an adult, I think there's a lot more to be mirrored in this story, and maybe adults appreciate more of the depth and the facets. But I don't think there's anything that stops kids from seeing the main message. Just watching them thoughtfully process Edward's losses and Edward's change from selfishness to selflessness, I've seen many kids really grasp that core message of the book. So maybe it's not as deep of a processing, but I think it's still along the same lines, which is another masterwork by DiCamillo, that she's able to elicit the same types of reactions from kids and adults.
And are there any passages that stand out for you that you'd like to share?
Oh, yes. Well, I'd read the whole book aloud if I could, but we'd be here all day. So I'm going to read a little bit from the end of the book without trying not to give anything important away, because this is really the crux of Edward's journey. At this point, he's started out as a selfish rabbit who is loved by a little girl but didn't know what it was to love himself. And he's gone through this journey of meeting other characters who, some of them show him love, some of them don't, but he himself has learned to love and then lost. And he feels broken at this point. He's been literally broken and put back together. And he's sitting in a doll shop next to a doll who's 100 years old and has this conversation with her. The old doll, who's sitting there waiting for a child to come and take her home, says, "I wonder who will come for me this time. Someone will come. Someone always comes. Who will it be?" Edward says, "I don't care if anyone comes for me." "But that's dreadful," says the old doll. "There's no point in going on if you feel that way. No point at all. You must be filled with expectancy. You must be awash in hope. You must wonder who will love you, who you will love next." "I am done with being loved," Edward told her. "I'm done with loving. It's too painful." "Pish," said the old doll. "Where is your courage?" "Somewhere else, I guess," said Edward. "You disappoint me," she said. "You disappoint me greatly. If you have no intention of loving or being loved, then the whole journey is pointless. You might as well leap from the shelf right now and let yourself shatter into a million pieces. Get it over with. Get it all over with now." "I would leap if I was able," said Edward. "Shall I push you?" said the old doll. "No, thank you," Edward said to her. "Not that you could," he muttered to himself. "What's that?" "Nothing," said Edward. The dark in the doll shop was now complete. The old doll and Edward sat on their shelf and stared straight ahead. "You disappoint me," said the old doll. Her words made Edward think of Pellegrina, of warthogs and princesses, of listening and love, of spells and curses. What if there was somebody waiting to love him? What if there was someone who would love he would love again? Was it possible? Edward felt his heart stir. "No," he told his heart. "Not possible. Not possible." In the morning, Lucius Clark came and unlocked the shop. "Good morning, my darlings," he called out to them. "Good morning, my lovelies." He pulled up the shades on the windows. He turned on the light over his tools. He switched the sign on the door to open. The first customer was a little girl with her father. "Are you looking for something special?" Lucius Clark said to them. "Yes," said the little girl. "I am looking for a friend." Her father put her on his shoulders and they walked slowly around the shop. The girl studied each doll carefully. She looked Edward right in the eyes. She nodded at him. "Have you decided, Natalie?" her father asked. "Yes," she said. "I want the one in the baby bonnet." "Oh," said Lucius Clark, "you know that she is very old. She is an antique." "She needs me," said Natalie firmly. Next to Edward, the old doll let out a sigh. She seemed to sit up straighter. Lucius came and took her off the shelf and handed her to Natalie. And when they left, when the girl's father opened the door for his daughter and the old doll, a bright shaft of early morning light came flooding in, and Edward heard quite clearly, as if she were still sitting next to him, the old doll's voice. "Open your heart," she said gently. "Someone will come. Someone will come for you. But first, you must open your heart." The door closed. The sunlight disappeared. "Someone will come." Edward's heart stirred. He thought for the first time in a long time of the house on Egypt Street and of Abilene winding his watch and then bending toward him and placing it on his left leg, saying, "I will come home to you." "No, no," he told himself. "Don't believe it. Don't let yourself believe it." But it was too late. "Someone will come for you." The China Rabbit's heart had begun again to open. And I'll let you figure out the ending for yourself. Don't want to give away the surprise twist.
That's a great passage. And thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you so much for joining me and talking about this book. I really do appreciate it, you know, for you to share your thoughts about it and to share it with other people.
It's my great pleasure. I really love this book every time I read it.
You can find Alina Sayre's website at alinasayre.com. Thank you for joining me on Dream Gardens. The theme music, titled All Together, is provided courtesy of Purple Planet Music. You can visit them at www.purpleplanet.com. Podcast cover art is provided by Creative Pro 180, courtesy of Fiverr, which can be found at www.fiverr.com. You can visit me at jleemott.com or follow me on Twitter at dreamgardensjlm. The Dream Gardens podcast is also available through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. If you like what you hear, please comment, share, or subscribe. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep growing, and keep reading.